I'm not a maintenance guy, like ever. For me, it's always improvement. It doesn't mean that we will be lifting every day super hard in order to improve, but just to have this mentality of and mindset of constant improvement, of constant growth, it's for me the key that you want to implement in your daily work.
Bienvenidos una vez más al podcast de Spaniard Performance. En el episodio número 7 tenemos a un invitado muy, muy importante para mí. Su nombre es Lucas Vilar, preparador físico del Baskonia, equipo profesional de baloncesto en la ACB. Entonces, el podcast de hoy es en inglés. Sé que para algunos de vosotros va a ser un poco más complicado, pero os recomiendo que intentéis escucharlo. Tratamos de hablar con la máxima claridad posible, pero tratamos temas muy, muy interesantes acerca de cómo Luca realiza su trabajo con los jugadores del Baskonia, jugadores de varias edades, tanto jugadores jóvenes como jugadores que ya llevan muchos años en ligas profesionales a muy alto nivel. Y en diferentes momentos de la temporada. Es muy interesante ver cómo una persona con tanta experiencia y sobre todo con una grandísima educación detrás aplica todos sus conocimientos a la preparación física en jugadores de muchos niveles, pero definitivamente jugadores que están a un nivel muy alto.
Welcome to the podcast, Luca. I'm glad you have the time because I know in season is really tough to do this, especially with the time difference and everything. But I'm really glad to have you on the podcast, and I would love you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit what you do or what you've been doing for the past year since you started strength conditioning.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for the invitation first. And yeah, the biggest problem is the time difference. Basically, when we travel with the team, I always have enough time to get in touch with people. So yeah, I'm working now with Baskonia, a professional basketball team that plays and competes in EuroLeague and ACB League of Spain. I have been here for the four season now in a row. And I will see about the future, but for sure I'm gonna stay this season to support the team and to travel all the time with them. Before that, I used to work in Croatia with professional basketball players, with national teams under 18, under 19, up to the senior level. And I spent some time also abroad in Turkey, working with one basketball club from Turkey. So more or less, last 10 years, I have been enrolled in some kind of basketball strength and conditioning, physical performance settings.
Okay. So what are you, just for the audience that is more in the studying now, exercise science, kinesiology, or any kind of thing like that, what is your background in that?
My background is what we call it, like a faculty of kinesiology here in Europe, but yeah, I guess for the Americans it's like a school of kinesiology. And I had like a full master program, and my master degree was strength and conditioning, or like physical conditioning of athletes. And then when I moved to Spain, after 1 year in Spain, I started my PhD. And I focused on load monitoring and management. And my mentor was Julen Castellano from Vitoria. And 1 year ago, more or less, I graduated.
How was that? I know we didn't talk about this, but how was that PhD experience for you? Did it help you out when you went into your practical setting? So all that studying and learning, did it help you out once you went into that practical setting?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the one of the things that I like the most about my PhD studies is that I didn't go to university to start my PhD studies, and I was then looking for the option to investigate. Basically, what we had been using in the first season made us think about contributing to the science. And since I didn't have my PhD diploma yet, it was just like a part of the PhD project. So what we did We practically focused on load monitoring and management with Catapult and with like some different methods that we also use for load monitoring. We compared it, we analyzed it, and then we made the whole project, you know, that we separated in 3-4 pieces, and then we focused a little bit more on like comparing internal external variables. Then we focused on short-term tapering, then on some friendly games analysis compared to training games and so on. So it was like a full project, and it was just like, it was so natural because it was part of our daily work. Yeah. We haven't done one thing in order to improve the PhD. The PhD just came naturally as a part of the everyday work.
That's awesome. Yeah. And as I get another question from that, it's like low monitoring, I know it's really cool, and it's basic for especially elite athletes that are going to play so many games in such a short amount of time. But how you do when it comes to, because when you monitor the load and you have to talk to the head coach, yeah, hey, this is where we at. This player, we got to pull a little back from him. He's feeling a little more tired. How you do that, or how you, because I guess you got to earn that trust from the coach to really, for him to really understand what you're trying to say, and that he has to listen to you in order to keep his players healthy.
Yeah.
How is that process?
As you said, like the first key, I think, like for anything, it doesn't matter of which topic we're going to talk about. Is it strength sessions? Is it recovery that you want to implement, or just load monitoring, periodization, whatever. Whatever you can do, first of all, you need to gain trust from the head coach in order to be supported, you know, because without the trust and support from the head coach, you know, is some things are very tough to implement, you know. Okay, obviously, in the locker room, you can help players when it comes to recovery, and head coach maybe doesn't need to know about those kind of things. But when it comes to load monitoring, obviously, and to manage load individually, you have to be on the same page with the head coach. So yeah, gaining trust is one of the toughest parts. And usually with new coaches, it takes weeks or months to start implementing some things. But with like, I believe with regular conversation on a daily basis, with kind words, you can achieve a lot. So once you achieve that, then you start looking at the numbers, and every coach has his own approach in it. My idea is to monitor players with both objective numbers that come from Catapult technology that we are using, or any other micro technology. And then also on the other side, we have some internal variables such as SRP, so we are tracking also that. And then what we are trying to do is like first couple of days in the week when we don't compete, usually it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, up to Thursday, we follow the general plan of what we have planned, like in general type of micro periodization of like weekly schedule, because I know that we cannot overload players if we follow the general plan. You know, it's a team sport, so yeah, everyone will do more or less what we have planned. And then after the first game, that's the key point. That's the point where I start to talk with the head coach. And then in between those two games, if we play two games in a week, like for example Friday, Saturday, we would start making some changes. Players who played more or have a higher load from like previous weeks and so on, maybe they would start riding a bike, while some guys do 5-on-0 and shooting. Some group of the guys who play less minutes, maybe they will do some compensatory work by playing 2-on-2, 3-on-3 on the half court, or maybe they will do some conditioning. Of course, they also go to make a little bit harder lifting session. It depends on the day, it depends on the week. But for me, the key in load management is this moment when we are in between the games. Yeah. When it comes to three games a week, then immediately after the first game, you already start doing some individual work. And it, when you play three games, it usually includes also a lot of traveling. So, yeah, it's more or less individual program after the first game, and then in between all of the games that we play in the rest of the week.
Okay, that's really interesting, because when you get I'm guessing when it gets to that part of the season, it gets really hard to monitor each one of the players and have you finish one game or you already like preparing for the next game is one game after the other.
The key is also to monitor, like, not only on a weekly basis but in a long term, and now we can talk only about load monitoring for an hour or two or three, but that's the whole point, you know. When it comes to a weekly management, then it's what we are looking for, like in between the games. Of course, if some player has a chronic load very high, of course we will also make some individual changes at the beginning of the week, but it depends like at which point we are, what's the next game, who is the next opponent, you know. We also talk with the player if he really needs time to rest a little bit. We talk with the head coach about what he plans at the beginning of the week. So it's not always that we never talk at the beginning of the week but it also depends a lot on the current situation.
And then I'm guessing also professional players, that we tend to see them as people that just play the sport and don't have nothing else to do. And then I believe one of the most important things is psychology and how these players are affected not only by the stress of the sport, but also by the stress of anybody's life. They all have probably families, friends, anything that is going to affect their lives. And that's something that you probably have to take into account too.
Yes, that's a huge aspect of the whole physical performance, and I'm the guy who truly believes in mental performance. I always encourage the club to hire sports psychologists, like part-time guys or full-time guys. First season when I was here, we had a full-time guy, then we moved to a part-time guy. But I think it's like, from that perspective, we need to understand players. As you say, they are humans. They have their own private lives. I think like a majority of the guys on our team are married. They have kids. You know, every season we have like two, three, four new babies. And I think like the first responsibility is that the head coach understands that. And then everyone else on the performance staff should also understand that the mental part is, if you want to be successful and in the season where you play 70 to 100 games, it's like a huge, huge aspect. And for example, I always say we can talk about recovery a lot, and it's always going to be a very, very important part of the game. But if you are winning, recovery is just like much, much better, much faster, and with positive mentality, body recovers, you know, more effective. So staying positive, being mentally well is like huge, huge part of a team success.
Yeah, super important. Let's go on to the first question. How I think is one of the biggest questions is when we get to the elite level, peak performance, either is a EuroLeague, ACB, NBA. We kind of see athletic performance more as a maintenance mode kind of thing, especially during the season. And how do you approach that? How do you approach physical development for your athletes? I'm sure you have younger athletes, you have older athletes. Will depend off season, in season, preseason. Yeah, so how do you approach that? Are you looking for a bigger, faster, stronger approach where you're trying to develop your athletes, you're trying to increase vertical jump, get them stronger, or you are in a maintenance mode? How do you approach that part of things?
Well, it's definitely an interesting question because it includes someone's philosophy. You know, for me, I'm not a maintenance guy, like ever. For me, it's always improvement. It doesn't mean that we will be lifting every day super hard in order to improve, but just to have this mentality of and mindset of constant improvement, of constant growth, it's for me the key that you want to implement in your daily work. Now, in some cases, it can mean that we will work to be stronger in moments where you cannot focus on being stronger, maybe you can focus on being faster. And when you cannot do either strong or faster or bigger, maybe you can focus, you know, to be better recovered. So it's anyway, it's going to boost up your physical performance. So it's a constant improvement in the things that we can manage, you know. So that's one of the key philosophies, like in my daily work. But yeah, like when it comes to bigger, faster, stronger, of course, it's something that we are looking for. That's our title, you know, being mm-hmm. like strength and conditioning coaches, yeah. or like physical performance. So that's what players are asking for, coaches and owners of the club. So yeah, we are trying to make our athletes more athletic. The most important thing behind this bigger, faster and stronger is that it should be individualized. So it's not always that all of the players need to be bigger, stronger and faster. When it comes to setting priorities, I always say that I will start with stronger. So I will focus on basic strength, because I think it a lot of players, elite players, especially in Europe, will lack not so much relative strength. I mean, more or less everyone can do 5 to 10 pull-ups. I think, like, okay, maybe 2 pull-ups are the worst part of relative strength, but then push-ups, single leg squats are something that we are looking for. So, for example, for me, it's normal that one player can do 30 good push-ups and 20 single leg squats, you know. So that's the start point of strength when it comes to relative strength. And then when it comes to basic strength, what I'm looking for is not like unlimited basic strength. I'm just trying to find some kind of thresholds depending on the player, on his body size, on his body composition, but at least to lift in, for example, bench press his own body weight, or like 1 to 1.5. Not like he doesn't have to lift 2 body weights of mm-hmm. on the bench press. Yeah. And when it comes to tread bar deadlift, it's at least 1.5 of his body weight. So if mm-hmm. he's like 100 kilo guy, to at least lift 1 to 3 times 150 kilos. So yeah. that's a threshold. But for example, he doesn't have to lift more than 2 body weights
mm-hmm.
on the deadlift. It depends on his history, like experience in lifting and so on. But there are certain thresholds that I'm trying to reach, to achieve, you know. And what is happening very often is that we have players who sometimes come play elite level, comes from country where they didn't do too much of like physical type of training. He has a great talent. And for example, I can tell you from my own experience, I just met a guy who we have on the team, and he has never done in his life 1 repetition of tread bar deadlift,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's an elite player, and he is, I truly mm-hmm. believe that he's an elite player, but physically, you know, I told him, hey, let's start and we see where we go. We might do something very good, you know, maybe yep. it can even boost you up. I truly believe in it. And now we are step by step going through tread bar deadlift, you know. Mm-hmm. So we started like with 60, 70, 80 kilos first weeks of the preseason. Now he's more or less doing it with 100 kilos. And there is no doubt that he might do 120 right now or 130 right now. But mm-hmm. the problem is that we have to be careful about lower back and his full body, that he doesn't have problems because of tread bar deadlifting.
Yep.
So we are going step by step. We are looking for his improvements, and that's one of the cases. So that's what I'm talking about. Improvements throughout the whole year. So mm-hmm. every month, if we can lift 5-10 kilos more, at the end of the season, if he's not going to be the player who plays every game 30 minutes, I think we will be able to reach some very nice weights in a tread bar deadlift. And mm-hmm. then, for example, like different example is like a guy who I see for the first time. He comes and he has college experience. First week I see him, I show him tread bar deadlift. He says, okay, let's go for it. I put like 100 kilos and then 100 kilos and plus. So we see how he goes. And he goes 100, 120, 140, 160, 180. And he finishes the session like with 200 kilos. Next week, he does 220. And then he stays in the club for like three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, for example, this season, he was with the national team for the whole summer. He was at the World Cup and he comes back. And should I suppose that he can do 220 right away? Maybe yes, maybe no. But I talk with him and then he tells me, okay, let's go. I haven't done tre bar deadlift now for 2 months. Let's mm-hmm. see what I can do. So we start with 100 and he comes to 140 and he tells me, let's wait a little bit. I don't feel like lifting too hard now, mm-hmm. you know. So now again with this athlete who had his 220, we had to step back, couple steps back. But mm-hmm. I know that in at some point we're gonna go there. So again, mm-hmm. it's improvement mentality. We know that we have to arrive there again because it's his capacity, you know. And with him, I will push that he comes back again to 200, 220, you know. So which is 2.2 his own body weight. But it doesn't mean that with the other guy, I will push 2.0. I will maybe push that at the end of the season, he does 1.5, 1.6 of his body weight in tre bar deadlift, and I'm going to be super, super happy, you know. So that's the strength part, you know. That's why I start always with strength. And then when it comes to bigger, that's like the only for the guys who need to get bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and the good thing about bigger is that we can always mix it with being strong, with strong type of training, because you can always superset it, you know, to get this hypertrophy effect. You know, you can always, after doing the strength session, you can always add some sets for getting bigger and so on. So bigger is like the second point. However, not with everyone. If you already have a bulky guy who is like big enough, you know, and mm-hmm. his body composition is good. And then the last part is the fast. You know, maybe it's strange to hear that it's the last part because it's probably the most important. Mm-hmm. But why I put it in like in the last part is that the fact that by playing basketball you can become faster, but by playing basketball you cannot become stronger. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you can somehow become a little bit stronger. Yeah. But not the strength that we are looking for, you know.
Yeah.
So when it comes to faster, you can maybe become faster a little bit more, especially in the preseason. If you lost some of your quickness, you can improve it by playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when you can combine it with strong part of mm-hmm. of training, because you can always make a complex or some kind of contrast to play on the force velocity curve. Yeah. You can also, after some period, or the players that you know very well, you can always make force velocity profile. And with strength training, like sub max or max strength training, you can always add some complex or contrast that will be very specific to, I don't know, 30% of his force velocity profile to do a couple of, I don't know, cleans or snatches or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. or he needs the medicine ball workouts. So you can always play with it and add it to the strength part.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. totally. Super interesting, and especially at that level, we need to understand that there's still improvement, and we still need to be looking for improvement, because the improvement doesn't stop. You're at the elite level; they're still playing their sport like they were before, and they still want to get better, and we still can make them better. I guess this is gonna be. We're gonna make it a little shorter. Because I want you to talk a little bit about the book. But now there's a big movement when it comes to movement mechanics for athletes in general. But in this case, I wanted to ask you about basketball, elite basketball athletes, because we think about elite, but you probably get really young players that are basically 18, 17, 16 years old sometimes. And do you believe in perfect movement mechanics? Do you believe in that? We see, I'll say my philosophy a little bit. We get other players, I'm going to put an example of Klay Thompson. He got just an ACL injury. People blame it on the landing mechanics, stuff like that. And we see Klay Thompson has been playing for, let's say, over 20 years now, counting his college career, his high school and everything. And and now he break his ACL, and I'm thinking, these guys playing over 100 games during three consecutive years, and fatigue accumulates. Is it more a problem of the landing, or is it more a problem of he's getting fatigue? He gets to a point where that's going to happen. But I would like to know your opinion on mechanics, on how you see mechanics. Do you, when you get a player, do you see him and you think, oh, that player is not moving right, or that player needs to have some changes, or how you see that?
Well, yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. Like when it comes to movement mechanics, I don't think that something perfect exists, because every human is pretty different. So when you put, first of all, we are talking about basketball. So in basketball, perfect mechanics, then you would have to separate the guards from forwards from centers, you know, which is really, really tough. Then you have like guys with short legs, then you have guys with longer upper bodies and so on. So it's like, it's life tough to biomechanically say that someone moves perfectly, you know. Of course, maybe we can take the best guys, the guys who decelerate the best, to set an example of how you should decelerate. Maybe we can take an example of a big guy upon his landing to say, hey, this is probably how the model should look like. But it's just like a model that we are looking up to, but I would never say that it's something perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, of course, something that looks natural is probably close to perfect, you know. Yes. So when you even when you show to, I don't know, my mother, a guy who lands with his knees completely caved in, she will probably say, hey, this here is something wrong, you know. So you can easily spot something that is like bad. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to good proper mechanics, it's, I would just say, hey, this is enough, you know, it's enough. I cannot see anything wrong. We can maybe analyze it with a little bit more if you want, with a slow motion camera.
Yeah.
But usually, like, to the eye, something natural and something normal looks normal, you know, so you don't have to make it like super complicated. When it comes to movement mechanics, I think it's very important to distinguish two things. One is straightforward running, and the other one is like specific basketball movements. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to straightforward running, as you said, we have to see if we have a young guy or like older guy, 30, 31 years old, 32 years old, or it's like a young guy. Of course, with a young guy, you would push to improve straightforward running mechanics if he runs like a dog and he drags his feet instead of like running, you know. Mm-hmm. We would definitely do something about it. So we would maybe step back and do some very, very basic running mechanics drills, you know. So we have to see if we are talking about the off season or preseason, in season. So if we have time in the off season, maybe we would even improve straightforward running mechanics with some experienced guys if they're in the off season, so we don't overstress them with some of the drills, you know. So the question is always, is there enough time, or do we have appropriate moment to focus on straightforward running mechanics? Because in the end, basketball is not about straightforward running.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it comes to specific movements, I think it's super important to know how to decelerate, how to change direction, and then all of the agility drills that we can use can be super funny, super interesting, competitive. I mean, here I learned a lot from Lee Teft. He's probably one of the best experts in this field in the mm-hmm. world. I followed a lot of his content, and I think like his progressions and complete philosophy on basketball specific movements is something that every strength and conditioning coach should know, especially the ones who work in the team sport settings. So when it comes to specific movements, again, do we have time to work on it? that's the biggest question with elite players. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, if we play a lot of basketball, if we compete a lot, maybe we have to consider that that bucket of speed, agility, and quickness work is full. It's always full. Doesn't matter at which point during the in season, it's always going to be full. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about players who compete more than 10-15 minutes and they practice. So yeah. even if we have a little bit of time, we have to answer ourselves, is that part of my time going to lead to the overload? Yeah. or like too much stress on mm-hmm. on the lower body, you know? So that's the questions that we need to answer. And if we answer this question and there is still time and reason to do it, of course, I would always say, hey, go for it. But now I think like the most important thing when it comes to working on movement mechanics is something that I truly believe in. And it sounds a little bit like a cliche, but it's super, super important that players are completely aware of what we are trying to achieve here. So they really need to be super focused, how they say, like a deliberate practice. Mm-hmm. You know, they really have to understand that this is something that can be a game changer for them. And they need to integrate it in their daily work.
Yeah,
in the trainings and the games. Now, mm-hmm. what is the most difficult part? That when you teach someone a good closeout, or you want to improve his closeout, or you want to improve his spin after he makes a rebound, mm-hmm. or you want to improve his first steps in a lateral slide, it's super, super important that they push themselves during the practice to do it as many times as possible, but by being focused, conscious about what they are doing. And this is the only way to improve something that they're usually doing completely unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the most important part of how to really do something about it. Because in the end, if you don't speak that way to the player, it's gonna just end up another exercise in the gym or another exercise on the court with bands, without bands, with medicine ball. I mean, you can record your sessions, but if you don't talk to the player and if he doesn't understand and if he doesn't push himself to put it in a real practice when he plays mm-hmm. one-on-one, two-on-two, when he plays five-on-five, then practically this whole thing about improving the mechanics is useless, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like the best thing you can do is actually analyze the game, sit down with assistants who analyze the game. They cut you, I don't know, five mistakes that player does very often in defense. And then you realize that it's because of like poor feet positioning, poor closeout mechanics, bad deceleration, staying tall. In deceleration, not being ready in a triple flexion position to mm-hmm. react, but he's always standing tall. And then when the ball comes to the player that he guards, he then goes down to take the position, and the guy already drives to his right side, you know, and then his right side is weak. So yes, I'm completely for those kind of things, but you need to have full trust from the player and full interest from the player to do it. So during the in season, I think it's very, very tough.
Yeah.
I think very tough. But for example, it can be a great, great work.
Yeah. We need the buy-in on the player. The player needs to believe that that's gonna help him and needs to have 100% focus on improving whatever we're trying to do with him. If we always talk about it here, the first thing we need to get is the players to want to do the work. If they don't want to do it, doesn't matter how we do it, doesn't matter when and how often, it's not gonna create any adaptations, any improvement or anything like that.
Yes, exactly. And we have to be really, really careful because it's a part of like basic strength and conditioning when it comes to change of direction and agility, and it's one part of like almost like skills improvement. Mm-hmm. So you really need to know the sport, and you really need to know who you are talking to and the way how you approach this. Yeah. You know, because if you out of a sudden become like a skills type of coach, I would be really careful with it. You know.
You enter in a field that is not yours, and
exactly
100%. I would like to, in the last two minutes, talk a little bit about your book. I recently started reading it, Physical Performance in Elite Basketball, and it really impressed me, to be honest, just to everyone listening right now. I think it's a book that is, it goes from the most basic stuff to the most complex stuff, and I really like it because you see a practical application on an elite sports performance team, which is tough to see. You see all the theory a lot of times. You see practical stuff a lot of times, but you see here how you implement it, all this stuff with your players at the same time. And I think is a really special book, just especially because you're targeting people that is actually studying exercise science, and you're targeting people, not just me, but people even older than me and with more experience, that it refreshes the basics. It gives you an organization of how you're doing it, why you're doing it, and with who you're doing it. And I think it's a really good book, and I'll definitely recommend. So I would like to know, did you talk a little bit about the book and explain us what was your goal with it, who you're trying to target, and all that.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thanks first for your kind words. I'm really happy that you have this opinion. I mean, that was the goal, you know, so people can like it and obviously use it in their practice. But now, like, the main goal was to support everything what I do in my practice with some kind of scientific research, scientific background, but also to provide it with tons of practical examples, because solving problems on a daily basis is something that elite basketball is. And we can learn a lot from basic books about periodization, about strength, about conditioning, but we have to realize that everything can change completely when you have a new roster, when you sign new players. Then you can have like completely different things when you sign a new head coach. So as we said, it takes 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, depends on what we are trying to achieve, to get the confidence and trust of the coach, so you can start implementing things that you already know. So that's why I opened the book with the communication chapter, because I think it's like super, super important. Mm-hmm. Before you start thinking about, oh, I know about basketball, oh, I know how I'm gonna test the players, or let's move to prevention work, stability, mobility, whatever. You know, you need to start by knowing what is your exact role on the team, how you should behave within the performance stuff, you know, how you should talk with the players, how you should cope with stressful situations, because elite basketball, every 2-3 days we have a game, you need to know how to cope well with stress. And then when it comes to typical stuff of like strength, conditioning, and so on, I wanted to give my best to provide some of the ideas. And to provoke, that was the most important thing, to provoke coaches to think in a way, young coaches and also experienced, on like periodization. Because when we come to elite basketball settings, it's very tough to talk about unique periodization models. Mm-hmm. When it comes to strength, when it comes to conditioning, because you have so much travels, you have so many different players, every once in a while someone gets injured and so on. So you have to be able to adjust, to change things. So even mesocycle planning is sometimes very hard, you know. So micro planning, 7 days, 14 days, sometimes a month can be like the most you can do. And then of course I wanted to focus on something that I really put a lot of effort in, was the load monitoring and management, especially because of my PhD project. And then in the end, of course, recovery, which I believe is like a super important part when it comes to elite basketball. And I think I covered it pretty well. I really shared almost everything or everything what I do with my athletes, and that was the goal, you know, to share everything what I know in a practical way with some scientific background, because I believe that it's important to have some scientific background, and that was the way to contribute to the field, you know.
Yeah, and I think for basketball coaches, not just strength conditioning coaches, that's one thing that I get questions a lot from basketball coaches, because they don't have a strength, most of the time people don't have a strength conditioning coach to go ask or to help them out with the team. I think that's something that at any level that book will probably help any, you probably have to have some understanding of basic concepts, but I think it will definitely help any basketball player, that any basketball coach that needs to help their basketball athletes to do some strength conditioning work, some conditioning stuff, recovery, mobility, all that stuff. Is definitely, it will definitely help any basketball coach. So
yeah, and I believe that the book is not hard to read, so every basketball coach can read it and understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think only a smart head coach should read the book and know this content. Not as good as we do, but he should understand the content, because if he supports his strength and conditioning coach in what we are trying to achieve, then he needs to know about it something, you know. It's not like, oh yeah, let's do the cold bath. No. He needs to know a little bit, like, what is the whole point behind the cold bath, or, you know, protein shake after practice, you know.
Yeah.
At least to have some knowledge, you know. Yes, that's what smart coaches
exactly.
You know, they will read those kind of books, you know. They will ask their strength and conditioning coaches why you do something, so I can support you even more, you know.
Okay, yeah, I get that. It's important, and I mean, the greatest coaches, that's what they do. They try to understand everything that is going to affect their players, and that's the only way to really control everything that's going on around. So that's pretty much it for the day. I know you got time constraints, so I really appreciate you coming into the podcast. I'll put all the links on the description of the podcast on YouTube, the links for your book. Well, I put the link for your contact, so people can contact you. You guys can contact Luca and ask him about the book. He will definitely help you like he did with me. So I really appreciate your time, and thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, man. Good luck.